Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward Delight, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests who are both experiencers and researchers in the realm of NDEs. You're welcome to call in to ask questions and make comments during the show. Ring toll-free at 877-876-5227 in the U.S. or 888-810-8322 in Canada. Otherwise, you can ring direct at 530-876-3222. There are a number of services available through our organization Toward Delight, providing near-death studies and support, Reiki and remote healing, psychic, spiritual, grief, and motivational counseling, NDE books and videos, and other products for body, mind, and spirit. I'd also like to encourage you to help support this program and VBS Radio by making a donation or sponsoring the show. For more information, please visit our website, towardthelight.org. This week, I'm very pleased to have back someone who's been on the show a couple of times already, Peter Schocke, who is the producer of the film Life After Life, based on the book by Dr. Raymond Moody by the same name. But we've also got a special treat because his wife, Stowe, is also joining us, and they've got a lot of wonderful things to share. So let's welcome Peter and Stowe Schocke. Welcome to Toward the Light. How are you both?
Thank you, Juliet.
Thank you. Good to
talk with you again.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you too, and it's quite mutual, actually. And I'm very excited to have you both because I know that you've been working on some projects together. But I'm going to do a little bit of a twist here because we haven't had Stowe on before. I want to sort of introduce you and invite you, Stowe, to share a little bit of some experiences that you may have had. And I honestly don't remember, so forgive me for having a little bit of a senior moment about what your experiences have been. But if you'd like to share anything about that and also what's led you into your current work, feel free to do so. So why don't we start with that?
Well, thanks again for having me, Juliet. It's nice to hear your voice. It's been a long time.
Yes, indeed. Likewise.
Yeah. Well, just a little bit about me. I'm a singer-songwriter, and my husband and I have collaborated, like you said, on many projects. We've written a few books together, and I help him kind of support him in his film projects that he does, and so that's a little bit about my background. I haven't had a near-death experience, although just in keeping with the theme of the show, I have had an out-of-body experience.
Well, there you go, and that counts.
Yeah, and I feel like it was a gift that I had given to me just a few months before I met Peter, because he was studying the near-death experiences. And I believe just having, I'd never even heard of near-death experiences or out-of-body, and I had a sudden out-of-body experience, which was incredible, and I didn't know what to make of it. A lot of people thought I was crazy, so after a while I quit telling people, but when I met Peter and he told me about the near-death experiences, I was really excited to hear what felt like some confirmation about my experience.
Now, I thought I remembered you telling me about an experience, and I just didn't remember the details of it, but I was certain that you had an experience. And when did this happen? When did you have this out-of-body experience, or have you had more than one?
No, unfortunately, I haven't. It was about 20 years ago, for a fact, exactly 20 years ago, and rolled over, I turned off the light, I rolled over in the bed, and instantly popped up out of my body, and it felt like I was probably, 20 feet above my body, although the ceiling, of course, wasn't that high. But I just looked down at my little body all curled up in the bed, and I have a fear of heights, and I was on a fourth floor, and but I didn't feel that fear while I was out, and I thought it would be nice to go to the big picture window, and I just instantaneously floated to this window. It was wonderful. And then I thought, wow, what would it be like to be downtown? And I was instantaneously outside of a large building way up high downtown Nashville. And at that point, my mind said, oh, I am afraid of being this high. And I was popped back in my body. And I had a roommate, and I sat right up in bed and turned on the light. I said, oh, you will not believe what just happened to me. And I stayed up half the night. I was so excited by this. It was a wonderful experience. And I wanted to share it with everyone, but people thought it was out of my head. So, like, yeah. I say, after a while, I kind of cooled down about it.
Was the back building there at that time? I can't remember how old that building is. The Bell South Building, the Bat Building.
Well, that wasn't, I don't think that was there.
Okay, I didn't think so.
It was a different building down there. But like I say, that experience, when I met Peter and he told me about the near-death experiences, I was able to relate, and I felt like that helped me bond with him and understand what he was doing, because otherwise I might have not understood as well.
And it was timely, because I was consumed by this interest in NDEs. I had two significant losses in the year before, and in that right about that time, and I was really, it was a very important subject to me, and I knew I was going to do a film. I had it in my heart to do that. And so I was talking about it a lot, and this woman whom I had met and rather quickly fallen in love with, I had a real instant recognition when I saw Stowe for the first time. It was an important common bond to be able to share, to be able to talk about this without her looking at me and thinking that I was a flake, you know. So
yes.
I think that was a real divine gift that she had that at the time. It was just, as she mentioned, just a couple of months before we had met.
And that's so powerful, and indeed it's a really, really, really big deal, because of the depth and the implications of these experiences, it's so important to be able to connect with someone that you can really resonate with deeply and be totally open, and they grok it, as it were. And you know, it's interesting, when I was putting your profiles up on the website, I just thought, this is such a deep soul connection. You know, acknowledging that between you two, there's even a sort of likeness, as it were. The fact that you did instantly recognize each other, that is so real. That is so valid, and I'm very pleased that you mentioned that. Not just the fact that you've had these interests and experiences in common, because you, Peter, you had that powerful STE, spiritually transformative experience when you were a lad, and then you still having the out-of-body experience. And both of those, you know, how nice that neither one of you had to come even close to death to have these experiences. They were just spontaneous experiences, and yet they impact you no less than if you had an NDE. And I do want to, you know, plug a friend here, because she was on my show recently. Her name is Nancy Clark. And she wrote the book, Hear His Voice. She also had a very profound, spiritually transformative experience, out-of-body experience. And she's actually wanting to hear from people who have not had an NDE, but rather STE and OBE, or you can call it illuminated experience, light experience, whatever. She wants to collect stories from people who've had these experiences and put them in her book so that we can get it out there that these experiences are just as important, just as valid, just as meaningful as a near-death experience, but also to let people know that you're not crazy. You're not a nutter because you've had these experiences. 20, 25 years ago, I was also in a closet. In fact, it wasn't until I came to Nashville, ironically, that I actually had my coming out, full-blown coming out. You know that I was on Channel 4 News there a couple of times. So, I'm really excited. And I want to give you two permission now to just, shout it from the rooftops. Feel free to tell everybody about these experiences, because also I think as you speak up, you are going to enable others to come out and say, well, as a matter of fact, I've been to that as well.
Exactly. That is pretty much my message these days, that we all need to speak up about our personal lives, because we each have that, and we may all look different, but inside we are sisters and brothers, and we have so many of the same experiences and thoughts. And it's important that we, in order to connect, that we share with one another.
Oh, absolutely. Now, have you found yourself being more intuitive still, or actively more intuitive as a result of your NDE, OBE, and are you trusting your experiences more?
Very intuitive since I've known her, and perhaps it did have something to do with that original experience. But she's also going through a process of reconnecting and trusting that intuition, and that is actually very much what she wrote about in Journey of Light, the new Doubleday book that's just been released several weeks ago.
That book.
Well, Journey of I'll begin and then I'll hand it to Stowe, because what we're doing in Journey of Light, it's a sequel to our first book, Reflections of Heaven, also Doubleday, in which the original book was speaking about many spiritual phenomena, including miracles, angels, afterlife experiences, things that we had collected in our studies and documentary films that we had produced for the Learning Channel. Second book, Journey of Light, brings it very much more down to earth, but showing that connection and discussing the connections of what it is to be a creation by the light. Our Creator is light, and
exactly.
In the beginning, and in our tradition in the West, to be reading God is light, and in the beginning was the light. We were created by God's light, and we are His creatures made in His image. So we ourselves have the light. In fact, Jesus said, "You are the light of the world." He said that of us. That alone.
Yes.
So what we are saying in this book is to understand that we are light-bearing creatures who are born into a rather dense and dark world, and which doesn't take much to look around and see the evidence of that. And what we are promoting and discussing and encouraging is for people to help to find their origin and that which we were originally created to be, and to find our way back and to know how to reconnect and how to be born back into that original condition, that original state that we were created. So anyway, I'm going to hand this to Stowe, because what she has written about in very concrete terms is her journey of light, And we refer to it as one of the stories of dawn after darkness, recognizing and discussing the dark times that we'd struggled through, and understanding and looking forward in hope that there is a dawn.
Thank you. That's wonderful. Go ahead, Stowe.
Well, I believe I may have shared with you on our journey one time that we took a trip that my childhood was rather troubled, and I of course am not alone in this world. So many people have that background, and you know, whether it's divorce or death or some kind of abuse, and I dealt with my troubles as a child by pretty much putting up a front and pretending like it didn't really bother me, and you know, being jokey and just trying to laugh my way through it, basically. And and that, of course, is really not the proper way to deal with pain. And I went through much of my life like that until I was about 39, and I had an experience where my father had told me that he had inoperable cancer, and my mother had died of cancer, so I guess this was a bit of a trauma to my system to hear that my father was also had cancer. He had lung cancer. And several days later, I had a dream, and in the dream, I was, much as I had been in my life, a victim. And I was just very hurt by someone in the dream, and I went out to a brightly lit area. I mean, it was kind of unearthly brightly lit, more than sunshine, it feels. And I went to this area and sat down at a table, and I just started crying. I was so brokenhearted. And I put my arms out on the table as I was crying, and I opened my eyes and looked down at my arms. And on my arms, in bold white letters, were words and some pictures. And I saw my eyes were just riveted to my right arm, which it was written, "I am an abused child." And at that moment, I woke up. You know, I just was crushed. You know, this was something I would have never said about myself. And Peter, of course, was very loving, and but none of that could get, you know, it just wasn't enough to get me out of the funk that I fell into. I mean, it was more than a funk. It was just I just free fell into a depression. And by that night, my hands began to itch, and they had little bumps on them, and they just itched like crazy. And by the next day, my fingers were so swollen, I couldn't even get my rings off. And this rash kind of went up my hands and my arms, and you know, it just was a kind of an outward sign of the turmoil in my spirit. And
this was right after you had the dream, correct?
Right, right.
Wow.
And I was non-functional. I was just a mess. And visions of my past just haunted me, memories of long ago. And so, you know, I didn't know how to deal with this. You know, I believed in God. I believed in the power of prayer. And yet I was so far out of balance that there was nothing that I could think or do that would get me out of it. Fortunately, though, I feel like I was not alone. There was a woman who was a self-professed healer who lived in Kentucky, and she had spoken to Peter just the week before about doing a project with us, and she called just a few days after this dream and said that she wanted to come down and talk to us that day. And I had no desire to have company. However, she was very insistent on coming over, and she did. And she, like me, even more so, had a really traumatic, abused childhood. And she told us all these stories about that. And at some point, she looked at me and she said, "If you would rebuke that rash," and she's, you know, she's a Christian. She said, "If you would rebuke that in the name of Christ, that would go away." And I was just, you know, feeling kind of skeptical. and in my state of mind. And anyway, Peter asked her to pray for me before she left, and she just said a very simple prayer and prayed that God would heal me. And the rash was still there when she got up, and I thought, well, nothing happened. But as she was leaving, I noticed that my hands didn't itch anymore. And I hollered out to her and said, hey, my hands don't itch. And she was overjoyed with this. She said, that's great. And we kept in touch. And over the next few days, I told her my progress. I mean, the rash just began disappearing. And her advice to me then was to write my life story. She said, this will help you. It'll get all of that poison that you've been holding inside of you. It'll get it out. And you can throw it in the fire when you're done, she said. I never intended for it to be in a book, but obviously the Spirit had other plans for it. But it was so cathartic, I tell you. I cried so many times, but they were really sweet tears. Not the tears that I had been afraid of. They were sweet and cleansing. And so that was
a lot of love around you. Love around you for that. And the dream, when you were describing that, I saw, wow, everything is right here at our fingertips, you know, that sort of thing where it's in the palm of your hand, dealing with your arms and your hands, everything being right there, and there's a way for it to be released. And that feels so strong and so right that you needed to share that. And I know, I mean, when we have these very deep, intimate, and powerful experiences, it's really hard to talk about it to other people. And a lot of it, of course, is ineffable. But at the same time, more and more I've seen how when we do start to share our stories, then somebody else will pipe in, wow, I've been to that too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, really wonderful. And I think it's important to just come what may, be truly of our authentic selves. And I was reading something about David Icke, bless him, he's just done amazing work, and he was talking about actually the some of the first words in the scripture saying at the beginning was the word, and he was talking about how sound, everything is vibration, everything is a frequency, and sound is what creates the form and holds the form together. And yeah, he's discovered a lot of things, he's done a lot of research, and people have laughed at him and balked at him, and he said, you know what, I'm just not going to allow myself to be bothered by what other people think, because I've got a message to bear. And I just said, thank you for saying that, because it is, you know, so many people are still locked in conditioning, brainwashing, and thinking inside the box, and being afraid to have whatever they have known to be challenged or changed. So unfortunately, a lot of people are still coming from a place of ignorance, and that shouldn't be ruling us or stopping us or determining whether or not we share our experiences, our truth. So it sort of started to become a bit of a mantra for me, because I too have been ridiculed and poked at and judged. In fact, I went into the closet when I was told, oh, you're going to need psychiatric evaluation, because I started to say something about my NDE, the big one that I had 31 years ago. And now I just, here I am, wide open, right out there. And I'm feeling less and less concerned about what other people think. And
well, it's one of the wonderful liberating things that result from shows like yours. Towards the Light allows people to talk about those things that they may have otherwise held in, or maybe they had tried to talk about and were ridiculed. And the same goes for not only illuminating experiences, but those experiences which cause trauma. interesting, isn't it, that
yes.
people will hold in those things which may be the most important to talk about.
Exactly, and wrestling with self-blame, you know, and there's nothing to blame oneself or really anybody for, because it's all part of the learning experience, but I just feel like there's nothing to be ashamed of, nothing whatsoever. And what beautiful, powerful souls have emerged, maybe not as a result of, but perhaps these experiences helped to form that which we have all become now, because we can certainly understand a lot more as a result of these experiences. We've got a lot more empathy, a lot more compassion. And also, again, to let everybody know that it's absolutely all right, that, you know, that you've been through this, and it's just, it's an opportunity to love is what it is.
Yes, it
that's
is.
That's a good way to put
and,
it.
And the empathy is the offshoot from this. When we realize that we're not alone, that we're not the only person who's experienced these things, then we learn how to empathize. And I really do believe that is a great part of the lesson that we're here on Earth to learn. That we go through experiences, and oftentimes painful ones, and the real blessing that we get from that and that we can pass on is that we know how to empathize and love others who are going through pain. We just don't know. If we live in a bubble, if we live in the perfect world bubble and never experience the pain, how do we know how to help other people? So if we can look at, I believe, too, a transformative experience can come from looking at even the painful experiences we go through and try to find out how that can be used and what it was we were to learn from those things. I'm sure you know Danion Brinkley. He was one of the fellows that we interviewed in our Life After Life film. And we were speaking to Danion a couple of days ago, and he was echoing what he had told us many years ago, that what he realizes through all of the painful processes that we go through here on this earth is we are here to learn things. And when we go through these struggles and dark times, that really what we ought to be asking in our prayerful times, when we're going to seek counsel from the Holy Spirit, is to find out what is it I'm trying to learn from this? What is it I'm supposed to learn?
I do that all the time, and I think that's the spot on, because when something happens to me and it doesn't make sense and it's upsetting or what have you, straight away I will ask, what is the message here? What do I need to learn? Exactly what you were saying. And how can I use this to grow, to heal, to serve others, instead of feeling sorry for myself or something like that? That doesn't mean that I don't feel frightened or frustrated at times, but at the same time, I will always say, what is the message in this? Even when I was struggling with the bronchitis and was contacting pneumonia recently, I just said, oh dear. And yet I just continue to feel such deep empathy and understanding for others who are suffering a great deal right now. And also still, it's interesting, I was just seeing the metaphor that we often use, wearing your heart on your sleeve. And so again, seeing that message on your arm in the dream, it was like you're calling to just put it out there. What has happened to you? And then others are just going to feel such a profound sense of relief, because they'll understand that they're not alone and that they can open up. It's like all of you are precious flowers that have not been able to open up and bloom totally, and finally you're giving one another permission to do so.
I think that's true. When we speak out, we do give others permission because, well, I had great fear in putting my story in the book. But as I started, we had to have, people proofread it. And as soon as people we knew started proofreading it, they would come right to me and start telling me their stories. And I thought, wow, that's incredible. These people I've known for years never told me this, And now they're talking.
There you go. Yeah. And that's what's so special about this. I tell you, it's very, very meaningful. So now, did you say this book is published now, or is it just being published?
It has released 3 weeks ago. It's now on Amazon. It can be found, Journey of Light, Stories of Dawn After Darkness by Peter Schocke and Stowe Schocke.
Well, I'm looking forward to my copy. That's wonderful.
It should be arriving any moment.
Oh, great. And maybe we should do a little bit of a shameless self-promotion, not so easy to say, for you two. Because, of course, we've got Life After Life available, the video of DVD now that you produced. And there were six indie ears in that you interviewed, was it?
Yes, that's right. Dr. Raymond Moody, who is one of the original researchers who uncovered the near-death experience, actually coined the term.
He coined the term,
near-death experience. He gathered for us five near-death experiencers, and I knew one from our own circle of friends. And we interviewed six NDE experiencers, very, very profound stories.
Mm-hmm.
And what we did in the editing of those stories was we followed the thread a stage at a time. And, of course, as you know, there is not one single experience or set of experiences that people go through, but there are many commonalities at the same time, whereas people are going through the out-of-body experience and then perhaps going through the tunnel, the dark tunnel into the bright light, having a life review in which they're held before their entire life seen in a flash and asked what they had learned in their lives. Now, not everybody goes through all of these elements, but there is enough corroboration to where when we edited the film, we were able to go from one to the other and hear several, three, four, sometimes five people saying virtually the same thing.
I remember that too. Mm.
Yes, which of course it is not scientific evidence, but it is corroboration. Which when we are doing research on anything, it is something that one really has to look for. Are these isolated events or is there a pattern?
Well, I really feel that there is a pattern as well. And, I think we, or a number of people can have a tendency to put too much emphasis on science. And to me, in my experience and observation, science is still in its infancy. And it's learning and growing and evolving as well. So I think that with these experiences, we are helping the scientific community to get a grasp of something because, again, they have been primarily focused on what can be measured on the physical plane, which is just a teensy, teensy, itsy-bitsy bit of reality. And in fact, it's not really real. It's actually a hologram, but that's another topic. There's so much more to life, to consciousness, to beingness than the science has been able to tap into. So I really think that all of this, we're all helping one another out to really tap into source, into light source, and the stuff of light source. and the stuff of what we are and what we're all made of, because we're made of that same stuff that is light source. We're just beautiful little pieces of it. And like, for example, David Icke was talking about, you know, light source being the ocean, and we're all the individual droplets of it, but when the droplet falls back into the ocean, that you can't perceive any separation. It's all one. And I thought, what a beautiful analogy is that, you know, because all rays of light emanating from the one light. And now more and more is people are starting to tap into everything being energy. And energy can never be destroyed. It is rearranged or it changes, but it can't be destroyed.
You know, I have a very interesting thought that comes to mind now and then as I'm looking at these questions. Science and spirituality or the realities of spirit, those things which are, I suppose we'd call it the things of faith, those things unseen, and that we take by faith. Interestingly, science has seemed to be in 100, 200 years past, contradictory to the idea of spirit, because everything was needing to be proven, and scientists were at a rapid rate being able to understand the structure of the physical world. Well, now, in our generation, we're not only coming to the point where physicists certainly do understand that all matter is energy to begin with, but we are now living in this technological age in a reality that was not here when we were born. We are living in a reality whereby this radio signal and these telephone signals and the whole internet that we're basing much of our life upon would have been sheer science fiction. Would have sounded as strange and unscientific as talking about the spiritual world. And yet it's all based on energy, harnessing it, understanding it, being able to quantify it. And the whole idea of quantum physics is bringing into reality, into physical reality, the understanding that there are frequencies of energies that need to be, that can be tapped into and related to. And so, you know, 100 years from now, I believe that this whole idea of spiritually transformative experiences and the idea that there is another world beyond, another reality beyond, it won't be simply a matter of speculation or believing something that's unseen, because I really do believe that we'll have created models and models of understanding to where we'll be able to think about these things and understand them as a matter of everyday life. So it'll be a matter of course, in everyday life, we'll understand what this is about.
Well, I also feel very strongly that we've already started to experience this quickening where the veil that appears to separate us from seeing into other dimensions, although some of us who are mediums can do that, but it's not going to be just, you know, it's not going to be just mediums like myself who are privy to that kind of stuff. It's going to be so commonplace, everybody does it all the time, it will be very natural that you will be able to see and converse with beings on other dimensions and tapping into them at will. And, you know, like I was saying, it's sure to be very, very commonplace by that time. And, you know, people are already talking about that being the case. so I think that's something very exciting. And when we can have the nerve to just come out there and say we've been through these experiences and not allow ourselves to be daunted by the thoughts or opinions or reactions of other people, and say, well, you know, never mind, this is me, this is what I've been through. And, you know, we are very sober when we're sharing these experiences, and they're very consistent in the content. It's not like we change our story every week. And just like PMH Atwater points out in her book, The Idiot's Guide to Near-Death Experiences, and she's got a revised edition of that that she's just completed, bless her, and it will be out later this year. You know, debunking the debunkers, where she's pointing out that unlike with hallucinations, the people who hallucinate do not have the after effects that we do. They are not impacted the same way. They do not have this clear memory that we do. We can recall it as if it happened yesterday. So there are so many ways to validate and to differentiate between having these experiences and having a hallucination. And I was curious too about, you know, do you experience a lot more like telepathy or insights and just feeling a lot more comfortable and trusting of these experiences? And what might you two experience together? Because I have a sense that sometimes you might think of something, even to put into your book, for example, thinking of the same thing simultaneously and then sharing it and implementing it. Does that sound familiar?
Well, it's happened to us a number of times, and we wrote about it in this book. There's an incident where Stowe was telling me, this was several years ago, that she was wishing to have a gas dryer. Our electric dryer had just died, and she really wanted to make the transition to gas because our house at the time had gas, and she'd known that gas dryers were superior. And I looked around for gas dryers. We tend to buy our washer dryers used, we get the Kenmore used, refurbished, and can be relied upon. And I just couldn't find one. I went to all the sources I would have normally gone, could not find one. By the end of the day, I was ready to tell Stowe, I think we're just going to have to go electric. So phone rings, an old friend of mine called, hadn't talked to a while, and he's telling me he's going to be moving, and he and his wife had a garage full of things they needed to move, and one of those things was a gas dryer. He had inherited from his grandmother. Now, as soon as he said that, I looked at Stowe and I thought, "Set up. You called John, didn't you? You told him. You told him about this, and he's calling to. He's just pulling my chain here." And sure enough, you know, there was no collusion there. She had expressed the desire before the day was over. John had called with not just a dryer, not just a gas dryer, but it was a Kenmore. and by end of day, we went and picked it up. He gave it to us.
Well, and you know this principle, Juliet, of how strong our intentions are.
Oh,
we put
yes.
our intentions out there, and when we have feeling behind it, when it's not just, you know, I can say, oh, I wish I'd win the lottery. Well, that's not, I don't really have intention behind that. Number one, I don't even play the lottery.
So, I don't either.
I'm out of that. I'm out of that ballpark. But when you have a strong feeling behind your intention that you really feel like that is something you want to do, something you want to have, something that needs to happen, I think our universe responds to that.
Well, you're absolutely right. And what's become very popular is this, law of attraction sort of thing. And interestingly, whilst I was on the other side, I could just think about something, and there it would be. I could just think about some place, and there I would be.
Yeah.
Or I could think about someone, and all of a sudden that being a person would be there, or I would be with that individual. And so because I've been to the other side a few times, I know that we can create just so instantly on the other side. On this plane, it takes longer because of the density and the low vibrational frequency we're existing on this plane. But the same principle does apply. We just have to put more effort into it, more focus,
right,
more thought. And you're absolutely right. When we really do have a heart behind it and put the intent out there, it really does work. It may not always work as quickly as we think or hope or would like, but it does happen. And then conversely, sometimes it will happen just about as quickly as it does happen on the other side. So that's a very good thing to remember. And also encouraging people to write down, for example, during the new moon, because that's the birth of a new waxing kind of energy. And again, we're dealing with energy, we're dealing with frequency. So if we write down, because that helps to put our intent out there to the universe,
mm-hmm,
what we're really striving for. And because I'm writing down all the time and in emails, I want to serve others. In fact, when I was thinking about where I'm to move next, I kept putting out that I want to be where I can be the most service to others.
Mm.
That's
why you
there
left
you go.
This area.
Yeah, that's why I had to leave Nashville, although I was thinking last night it wouldn't hurt my feelings to come back and visit and give all of you hugs, because it's just, there's been such magic that has happened there, and it doesn't mean that it won't happen again. It's really, really tremendous, and I'm so pleased at what you two have been doing. Have you got any projects that are in the works right now that you're working on?
We always have try to keep one or two book and film ideas on the horizon. There's one book that I'm right now pursuing to do a film documentary on. It's another NDE book. It's the one that's in the bestseller category right now. It's called 90 Minutes in Heaven. And what makes this one interesting is this one is unlike many of the NDE books that we've seen before that sort of fall outside of traditional religion, and I have a foot in that world, as I, with my transformative experience, I had what I call a Christ encounter. And so my life has been all about trying to explain what it was that happened to me. Without using a lot of cliched religious terms, because I really don't consider myself particularly religious. I know that Christ is the light, and and you could say that the light is the spirit of Christ. And to me, that is so much more powerful than trying to describe doctrines or laws or dogmas. So what interests me about this book called 90 Minutes in Heaven is that it was an NDE experienced by a minister who had a horrible, serious car wreck as he was coming out of a Baptist minister's conference. He was so badly mangled and damaged that he was pronounced dead on the scene.
What's his name?
His name is Don Piper.
It sounded familiar. So yeah.
And he, as he was laying there for the next hour and a half, and the traffic was blocked for miles and miles, one of the ministers who had also come back from the conference saw this awful wreck and felt very compelled in his heart to go and pray for this poor sap, whoever it was who had been in this awful wreck. Had no idea it was actually a friend of his. And was compelled. He just heard the Lord speaking to his heart, saying, "Go and pray for that man." And he went in, just managed to be able to crawl in through the trunk of this wreck and pray for this corpse that was laying there. And he felt that he had to just stay there and do that. and he prayed, and he was praying aloud. And at one point he sang, you know, one of the old Baptist hymns. I think it was "What a Friend We Have in Jesus." And in the middle of the verse, this corpse started singing with him.
Wow.
And the minister just raced out of that trunk. He banged his head on the trunk.
He was scared
to death, but also came out and told the EMI what it was. It took about another 20 minutes to persuade the EMI that this corpse was actually still alive. Well, anyway, Don did revive, and over the next several years, he went through awful, awful rehabilitation. And and the rest of the really two-thirds of the book is talking about the awful journey he had with just becoming physically healed again. And he was very injured and lives permanently crippled, but he had some so very profound experiences with his long process of recuperation and really his spiritual experience, even beyond his near-death experience, was learning how to cope with the difficulties in this world and how to cope with the pain and how to cope with so many things. But I found his bottom line story was so profound, and his suggestions and advice and insight to the readers is so strong that I feel quite compelled to pursue that as a documentary. And so, long answer to your short question is yes, that's one of the projects that I am hoping, praying to be able to develop as a film.
Well, that is so wonderful. And well, this takes us, believe it or not, to the top of the hour, pretty much the end of this current transmission of Toward the Light. My goodness me, time flies. It's been so wonderful having both of you with us, Peter and Stowe Shockey, and I look forward to participating in some projects with you in future too. And I would like to remind our listeners, for information about all of this, please visit my website, towardthelight.org, and we will return next week for another transmission of Toward the Light, and it will be wonderful to join you then. Thank you, Stowe. Thank you, Peter, for being with us. It's just been such a joy to talk to you again.
Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure.
Lots of love and hugs to you. Ooh, and
you.
Everybody, bless you, and do remember that it is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye, and do remember that only love prevails. We will speak to you next week. Blessings and light from Toward the Light.